The greatest pain that we feel is that inflicted on us by other people. And we're made for relationships by God. We're made to enter into intimate relationships, and therefore we have a high degree of vulnerability. That is precisely where we find the Apostle Paul when he wrote 2 Corinthians.
Thanks for being here on this Monday broadcast as John MacArthur kicks off an encouraging study. It's a biblical blueprint, if you will, for dealing with and even benefiting from pain and hardship and adversity. The title of John's series here on Grace to You, Making Sense Out of Suffering. John, by way of introduction, when we talk about making sense out of suffering, what we're really saying is that times of suffering and pain often lead to some serious questions about God and His control over the day-to-day events of life, particularly the ones that hurt.
Well, that's exactly right. Everybody struggles in life and everybody suffers in life, and it's pretty normal if you're a believer to wonder, what is the purpose of God in this? Does He have a purpose? How am I going to understand that purpose? You know, as I think about it, it is probably true that more Christian books in recent years have been written on the subject of making sense out of suffering than any other subject I can think of. And that's not because suffering is worse in this generation. It's probably less suffering today than certainly in the past. But people have an expectation for a comfortable life. And so people struggle when things go wrong. In other parts of the world today and in other periods of history, people expected suffering and weren't as surprised as people seem to be today. But nonetheless, the question comes, how can I make sense out of suffering? We're going to try to help you answer that. As we always do, we're going to answer from the Word of God. I have a favorite passage on this subject. It's 2 Corinthians chapter 12. And it talks about Paul's thorn in the flesh and how he dealt with it, but it's so much bigger than that. This study, I really believe, will lead you triumphantly through the most painful issues of life. It'll lead you to peace, settled trust, and confidence. So as we look at the subject of making sense out of suffering, we're going to examine five purposes that God has and five purposes that He will accomplish through our affliction. You don't want to miss a day. Be with us every day as we study making sense out of suffering.
Yes, make sure you tune in. These lessons will be particularly helpful if you've been through a dark valley or if you're in one right now. And with that, here's John launching his study, Making Sense Out of Suffering.
Some years ago, a rabbi wrote a book called When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And he asked the question, why do bad things happen to good people? A better question is, why do bad things happen to everybody? Because that's how it is in life. Fallen people in a fallen world have to deal with difficulty. The greatest pain that we feel is that inflicted on us by other people. And the closer they are to us, and the more we love them, the greater their ability to inflict pain on us. And we're made for relationships by God. We're made to enter into intimate relationships, and therefore we have a high degree of vulnerability. That is precisely where we find the Apostle Paul when he wrote 2 Corinthians. He is hurt, and he is hurt profoundly, and he is hurt deeply, deeply enough to describe himself in chapter 7 of this epistle as depressed. I really believe that it was the point of Paul's deepest personal disappointment. It was his deepest personal pain. He was being betrayed by the Corinthian church where he had spent nearly 2 years and which he loved so dearly. He was being betrayed by them because they had fallen under the influence of false teachers who had lied about Paul and taught a false gospel and other lies. And these Corinthians had betrayed Paul, turned from him, were beginning to embrace the false teachers, and Paul was crushed. In fact, he describes this in verse 7 of our text in these words, "There was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me. This assault by the false teachers on the Corinthian church, which resulted in their betrayal of Paul, is here described as a thorn in the flesh. He further describes it as a messenger of Satan. A messenger is the word angelos in the Greek. It means angel, and an angel from Satan is a demon. And so he's telling us here that this terrible, terrible betrayal by the Corinthians, this defection from the true gospel and the truth that he had taught them, this was all being orchestrated by a demon. Demon-inspired false teachers had come into that church and perpetrated this terrible, terrible mutiny. And the effect of it was to buffet me, he said, and that's the word torment. Paul was personally tormented by the problems in the Corinthian church. Because he loved God so much, he didn't want to see God dishonored. Because he loved the gospel so much, he didn't want to see it misunderstood. Because he loved the church so much, he didn't want to see it torn up and divided. Because he loved those people so much, he didn't want to see them fall victim to lying false teachers. This was like a stake just driven right through Paul. It was just impaling him. The pain and the suffering were so profound. And I suppose in his own mind, he looked at Corinth as one of his crowning achievements. Having spent, as I said, nearly 2 years there and had such tremendous effect and blessing and impact. And here it all seems to be falling prey to this demon-inspired group of false teachers and has resulted in a betrayal of him by his own beloved people, whom he himself had led to Christ. He can't get any lower than this. No physical pain can match this. No economic deprivation can match this. No travel difficulty can match this. No shipwreck can match this. No whipping, no stoning, no lashing by the Jews can match this pain. So here we find Paul at his deepest hour of suffering. And therefore, we would expect to learn the most about how to handle suffering. If we can find a man in his most profound time of suffering, that's the place to learn the lessons, because they'll be more clearly indicated in that environment. And that's exactly what happens. Now, Paul knew that God had allowed this to happen, and that was the amazing part. Sometimes bad things happen to God's people because God allows them to happen. He has a purpose in them, and that purpose is to bring them to some spiritual level beyond where they are. Verse 7 says, "There was given me a thorn in the flesh." This, by the way, was a gift, however, an unsolicited one. It was a gift, and it was really from God. We know that because in verse 8, he asks the Lord to remove it. God had allowed this to happen. As we saw, God allowed Satan to assault Job. God allowed Satan to assault Peter. For his own purposes, God will allow the devil to do his work. And in the end, it will affect the divine purpose. Now, the question is, what does God accomplish in the life of his own through suffering? Why did God allow this? Why would God allow a demon-inspired group of false teachers to go in and tear up a church? Why would God allow that? We would assume today that if that ever happens, that's the devil, that's Satan, that's the demons operating on their own and against the will of God. But not in this case, and not always. God is allowing this to happen. Why? Well, I'm going to give you 5 reasons why God allows suffering in your life and mine. 5 reasons, and they're formidable, practical, powerful reasons. And I really believe they will become an anchor for your soul in trouble. Number 1, God uses suffering to reveal our spiritual condition, our spiritual character. God uses suffering to reveal our spiritual character. You really do not know the truth about someone spiritually when everything is going well, right? It doesn't surface. Because basically they appear to be at peace and happy and with a measure of joy and satisfaction and fulfillment in life because superficially and on the surface, everything's okay. Then when things begin to go wrong, reality begins to surface as to their spiritual condition. And the worse things get, the more their spiritual character is unbared. When you strip away the blessings and you strip away the successes and you strip away the prosperity and you strip away the health and you begin to peel it all back, then you're going to find out what somebody is really made of spiritually. God wanted to accomplish that in the life of Paul. Because the truest crucible for testing one's genuine spiritual character is the severest trouble. And it was very important to God that the character of Paul be manifest. Paul himself, you remember, wanted to establish his integrity. He wanted to establish his credibility. He wanted the Corinthians to know he was faithful, he was godly, he was not sinful as they were accusing him of being. He wanted them to know the real quality of his spiritual life, and there was no better way for that to surface than in the midst of this deep, deep suffering. Now, I need to take you back to the beginning of the chapter to get into the flow where this point is made. Go back to verse 1 for a moment. You remember that Paul has been forced into a boasting mode because he is forced to demonstrate his superiority over the false teachers. He has to demonstrate that he is their superior in every way. And so he's been forced to boast, and he doesn't like it. He's given long, long disclaimers about how distasteful it is to him, but he's forced to have to do it. It is foolish to do it. It is fleshly to do it, but he has to do it. So he says boasting is necessary, though it's not profitable. He says, look, I don't like this. I don't like boasting. I don't like comparing myself with somebody else. You forced me into it. I don't like to talk about visions and revelations because it's not profitable. It's not helpful is literally what the Greek says. It's not useful, but you have forced me to this. And then in verse 2, he recites this incredible vision, referring to himself in the third person because of his humility. He says, I know a man, meaning himself, in Christ, who 14 years ago was caught up into the third heaven. Verse 4 says, caught up into paradise, same thing. Paul says, all right, you want to talk about visions? I went to heaven. That's right. I had my own personal trip to heaven. It happened 14 years ago, and I've never referred to it, never written about it in all these 14 years, never brought it up until now, and you forced me to do that. I don't know whether I was in the body or out of the body. I don't know the nature of the whole thing. God knows. I heard inexpressible words. I heard what I heard and saw what I saw, but I can't translate it into an earthly language. And even if I could, verse 4 says I wouldn't be allowed to. Now, why does he bring this in? He's in the middle of talking about all his suffering and all of his pain. And in chapter 11, you know, starting in verse 23, clear to verse 33, it's all about suffering and suffering and suffering. And starting here in chapter 12 and verse 5, it's all about weakness and suffering again. And why does he throw that thing in? Well, because that was a big deal to the Greeks. And the false teachers had no doubt come in and claimed visions and claimed revelations because the Greeks believed that those who were truly representatives of the gods had experienced mystic visions. They had had transcendental experiences, like many people today. The Corinthians and the Greeks were enamored by folks who said they had a vision of God. Some of the people even tried to induce those visions through drunken orgies. And the idea of being drunk was somehow that in your drunkenness, you could get outside yourself and be elevated to this great vision of God. Not long ago, Timothy Leary was advocating the same thing through drugs, that you can get high and discover God. Well, that was exactly what the Greeks thought. Mystic visions, mystic revelations, transcendental spiritual experiences were what set apart the great religious leaders from the crowd. The Corinthians were swept away by these claims, and there they were, groveling before these lying braggarts. Paul says, okay, so I had that kind of vision, a real one, not a false one, not a fabrication, not a figment of imagination, not a satanic counterfeit. I had the real thing. I went to heaven and came back. Now I told you, what good did that do? I don't even know what condition I was in when I went and came. I don't know if I was in the body or out of the body. I don't know. It's indescribable and it's incomprehensible. I can't say any more than I went and came back and that's all I know. And it was personal. It was only me and nobody else. It's not repeatable. It's not reproducible. It was 14 years ago. It happened once. God allowed it to happen to give me a vision of heaven to sustain me in my suffering. The Lord knew that Paul was going to suffer more than any man in redemptive history, and other than the Lord Jesus Christ himself. And as a result, he needed to be sustained with a hope for glory. And so God gave him a glimpse of glory to show him what was waiting him. So that when he said, for me to depart and be with Christ is far better, he knew exactly what he was talking about because he'd been there. God gave him that vision to sustain him in his suffering, but it was for that moment and that moment alone and only for him. And it was indescribable, incomprehensible, inexpressible, personal, not repeatable, not reproducible, and not even permissible. He couldn't even talk about it. Furthermore, it wasn't verifiable. There was no way to verify it. So what are you going to do? He's going to say, well, I went to heaven and such, and this is my experience, and all the false teachers are going to line up and say, well, we went there too. And how are you going to verify anything? Can't verify anything. And then what it does personally is it tends to produce pride. And Paul knew that. It tends to produce pride. You've been to heaven and back? That could make the best of men proud. So Paul in verse 1 says, this isn't helpful. It's not helpful to you for all the reasons I've just given. It's not helpful for me because it just feeds my pride. So let's get off the subject. Verse 5. That gets us into our text. On behalf of such a man will I boast. I'll talk about the man who went to heaven. I'll talk about him. He's referring again to himself in the third person as he has, expressing his humility. I just want you to know this. On my own behalf, I will not boast except in regard to my weaknesses. What are you saying, Paul? I'm saying, look, it is true. I went to heaven. I have a right to say it. It happened. It can be acknowledged. It was amazing. It was spectacular. It was incredible. It was a one-of-a-kind experience. It was great privilege that I was allowed to go. But you need to know this. I was passive in the entire thing. I was passive. I don't even know what state I was in. I didn't seek it. I didn't make it happen. I didn't deserve it. I didn't produce the effort. It wasn't some honor. It wasn't by virtue of my merit. It was something God did, and that's it. And it really doesn't say anything about my life at all. I can speak of it, but not on my behalf. That is to say, not as if my power or my will or my merit or my work contributed to it. All I can speak about is my weakness. I mean, all I've ever contributed to is weakness. I'm just an ordinary man. That's all I have to bring before you is my weakness. That's it. And you see, that was such a powerful thing because it was true. He was weak. He was human. They said his speaking was unimpressive and his presence was unimpressive. He was no orator. He was simplistic, and all he ever talked about was this crude message of the cross, and he didn't come in the wisdom of man and so forth and so on. He was just a plain, ordinary, weak man. But you see, therein was the real explanation. Because how else then could you explain his immense impact except for the fact that it was God through him? It couldn't be explained by Paul. You couldn't say, well, no wonder he's had the effect he's had. He's a powerful presence. No wonder he's had the effect he's had. He's a profoundly gifted thinker and speaker. He's an articulate orator. His rhetoric is without equal. No wonder he sways the masses. But all of that just wasn't how it was. He was just a weak and simple man, and there was no explanation for him except God coming through him. Verse 6, he says, if I do wish to boast, I shall not be foolish. for I shall be speaking the truth. What am I going to be a fool like them and lie? If I do speak, I'm going to tell you the truth. And the truth is, I did go to heaven. That is the truth. I'm not denying it. That would be false humility. I'm not going to stand here and be falsely humble like some fool. I will speak the truth, but I restrain myself. And here's why. End of verse 6. Here's the key. So that no one may credit me with more, here it is, folks, than he sees in me or hears from me. Boy, that is so critical. So critical. His enemies have claimed to have visions. His enemies have claimed to have revelations. And Paul just says, I will not build my apostolic defense on that stuff. It is not repeatable. It is not reproducible. It is not explicable. It is not verifiable. It's not helpful. And anybody and everybody can claim to have all kinds of visions, and who's going to know? If I have to base my defense on an unarticulated, unexplainable, unrepeatable, unverifiable spiritual experience, I'm in bad trouble. I'm no better than all the charlatans and all the fakes who do that all the time. So, end of verse 6. Here it is. I don't want you to credit me with anything other than what you see in me and hear from me. Boy, I'm telling you, folks, there is the acid test. You say you're a spokesman for God. You say you're a man of God. You say you represent God. You say you come with the authority of God. Don't tell me about your visions. Let me see your life and hear your words. That's the criteria. Nothing ambiguous about that. That's verifiable. What can be seen in his life and heard in his words was the proof of who he was. When these supposed men of God, these supposed prophets and seers of our day come along and tell us all about their visions, the right response is fine. There's no way to verify any of that. Let me follow you around and watch your life, and let me hear you speak. Let me hear the words that come from your lips, and let me measure them against the word of the living God. That's the issue. Visions, not helpful. Spiritual experiences that are unrepeatable and unverifiable, not helpful. And they're not worth the least simple, righteous act and word. So Paul is trying to show them who he is by his life. And the Lord is then saying, okay, if you want your life to really manifest your true spiritual character, I've got to put you through some suffering, because then the truth will really come out. Nothing in life is more effective in revealing what a person really is spiritually before God than trouble. Trouble. The greater the trouble, the truer the test of character. Paul then is plunged into the deepest trouble, the deepest sorrow, the severest pain, and is therefore seen to be the man of God in the most clear sense. You see, what you really are shows up when everything goes wrong, doesn't it? When Satan has just driven a stake right through your heart, torn up your most precious treasures, wounded you in the area of what is most important to you. And what was most important to Paul was the truth and the church and the people he loved. And when Satan was ripping that to shreds, that was his deepest pain. And it was the perfect environment to find out his spiritual character. How did he act, and how did he speak in the midst of that? See, modern false teachers, they want people to believe they're spiritual, and they want people to believe they come from God, and they speak for God, and they have divine authority, and they teach the truth. Because they have had visions and revelations, and because they're prosperous and powerful and popular and draw big crowds, let me tell you, be suspicious of those people. Real spiritual power and real spiritual authority and genuine spiritual integrity looks ordinary, looks weak, looks unimpressive. But when you look closely, what you see and hear is the evidence of genuine spirituality. Be suspicious of the people on parade. The real spiritual power comes in very ordinary packages, and you scratch your head and say, I don't know how God works through him. He's so ordinary. So Paul's crushing thorn was exactly the right circumstance to demonstrate his true character, and he simply calls on the Corinthians and says, just look at my life and listen to my words and make your judgment. Are these the words of a godly man? They would have heard many of them, the first epistle, 1 Corinthians, and even before that, a letter that he wrote them. And after 1 Corinthians, he wrote them another letter called the Severe Letter. And now he wrote them 2 Corinthians. That's four letters and nearly 2 years of dialogue and a visit in between in which he personally spoke with them. They had plenty to see and plenty to hear. Trouble will test your character. And that was good for Paul because he was trying to demonstrate to them how pure his life really was, and nothing would show it better than the immense suffering the man was under, even when he wrote 2 Corinthians. And it wasn't just the suffering from the Corinthians. There was all kinds of other stuff in his life that threatened his very life as he woke up every day realizing he could be killed by his enemies. So God allows suffering to manifest our character, our spiritual character.
That's Grace to You with John MacArthur. Thanks for tuning in today. John has been the pastor of Grace Community Church since 1969. He's also chancellor of the Master's University and Seminary, and his current study is titled Making Sense Out of Suffering. Now, if you've been a Grace to You listener for even a short time, you know that we have a sermon archive from which you can download any of John's 3,500 sermons free of charge. And while on any given day you might find certain messages timelier than others, John's current study on dealing with suffering is one that is sure to help all year long. So head to gty.org and download these lessons. Get in touch today. Again, this study and any other of John's sermons are available to download for free at our website, gty.org. You can also get any of John's messages for free in transcript format. Just go to our website, gty.org. And if you'd like to purchase John's series, Making Sense Out of Suffering, in a 2-CD album, it's a great resource to put in a friend's hands. And it's reasonably priced. Shipping is free. To place your order, call 800-55-GRACE or go to our website, gty.org. Also, keep in mind that Grace to You is here each day because of the support of faithful friends like you, people who are finding practical spiritual nourishment from John's daily Bible teaching. So thank you for your financial gifts and especially your prayers. To express your support, call 800-55-GRACE or go to our website, gty.org. And now for John MacArthur, I'm Phil Johnson, inviting you back for Tuesday's broadcast when John's going to look at what strengthened the Apostle Paul in times of severe testing and how you can follow his example. That's on the next installment of John's study, Making Sense Out of Suffering. Join us as we continue celebrating 50 years of unleashing God's truth, one verse at a time, on Grace to You.